Welcome into another episode of the Bengals Beat Podcast. I'm Kelsey Conway here with my co-host Charlie Goldsmith, and we are here to break down the Bengals Week 8 loss, a 34-31 loss to the New York Jets here in New Jersey at MetLife Stadium. Charlie, let's just start with, give me your gut initial instant thoughts on what the Bengals did today.
Yeah, there's no reason you should lose a game. You're up by 11 points with 5 minutes left, and it does hit on some of the issues we thought might have been problems for the Bengals at the start of the season. How they targeted the Bengals linebackers in the passing game, how pass protection, more than it has all season, was a huge problem for the Bengals, specifically in the red zone. And how the Bengals, again, still have flaws that can be exposed when Joe Burrow and the Bengals offense and the Bengals skill position players aren't winning every single matchup. The Jets on both ends, aside from Burrow, came up with a game plan that worked and limited so much of what the Bengals do best.
Well, and just to provide more context here, the Bengals defense, which had been a very formidable group up until this game, a top 10 unit in almost every statistical category, allowed the Jets, with Mike White as their quarterback, their backup quarterback who hadn't even recorded an NFL start before this game, to put up 511 yards of total offense. That is a lot, with most of them coming in the passing game, over 400 passing yards. It just wasn't a performance that we've been used to seeing from the Bengals. We didn't really see Trey Hendrickson and the pass rush really take over in the way we've had in games past. From a coverage standpoint, they weren't glued to the Jets offensive players like we've used to seeing. Just across the board, as Sam Hubbard said, a very flat performance specifically with the defense.
Yeah, it was the opposite of what the Ravens did. What the Ravens do is like long extended plays that took advantage of Lamar Jackson's mobility, athleticism, his ability to throw off platform. Since Mike White has, no offense to him, none of that, what the Jets did was they built an entire offensive game plan off slant, screens, pitches, and handoffs. And each one of those were the reason for explosive plays consistently from the Jets offense. You just look play by play at short right, short left, over 150 yards by the Jets running backs in the air through the passing game. And specifically, they often looked at who specifically Logan Wilson or Jermaine Pratt was guarding, and they threw that person the ball. Even if it was for a short pickup, they were able to make it longer. Like the play that stands out in my mind is, I believe the last touchdown the Jets had, it was like a pitch to Carter on the side. Wilson just whiffs his block, and that's the kind of moment we hadn't seen from the Bengals this season, let alone Wilson, who had been playing so, so well to start the year. So there were moments like that that the Bengals had never shown before, and they really showed up.
Yeah, it was a very surprising performance from a group that the leaders all said last week, Jesse Bates, Joe Mixon, and obviously Joe Mixon on the offensive side of the ball. But the point I'm trying to get at here is the Bengals knew what they were coming into. They knew this was the third and final road game that they had in the stretch. They knew they were going to get the Jets' best effort because, as Sam Hubbard said, we're not used to being hunted. We used to always be the hunters. And I thought that was interesting. But regardless, I don't really buy too much into this whole notion of like needing to learn how to win. Like, you're either built in a way that your leaders don't allow you to lose games like that. I don't really find when people say, well, can you learn from this win? At the end of the day, they got outplayed by a team that they should not have lost to. And that's kind of where I'm at with this game.
What they need to learn how to do is sustain consistent fourth quarter drives against a team with great pressure up the middle. The two teams the Bengals have played this season with the best interior pass rushers are the Bears and the Jets. And there's a reason why those have been the two worst games the Bengals have had this season. The pressure that New York forced up the middle was the reason for the last two stops they got against the Bengals, was the reason for Burrow's big third down sack in the fourth quarter, was the reason it was connected to Lawson's like swatting the ball and intercepting it and putting the Jets in position to score the game-winning touchdown. It was the reason the Bengals weren't able to run the ball at all for virtually the entire game. It was the reason that the Bengals, well, at the end of the first half, came up with a double pass from Tyler Boyd to Joe Mixon. They were struggling so much to just extend the field and give more space for these plays to develop because of how quickly the the Jets were sending pressure up the middle. That's something we hadn't seen in a while, but maybe part of that reason is the Jets are better up the middle than any team the Bengals have faced since they played Chicago.
So it was maybe a case of the Bengals just really hadn't played a defensive line that had the interior guys to really test, okay, is this offensive line really better, or are they just better than their opponent that day, which at the end of the day, that's all that matters. But when we're talking about like statements, how can we evaluate the Bengals offensive line? TBD, because Charlie, we also probably should talk about the inability to get any push in the run game. Third and ones continue to be, short yardage situations continue to be something this team struggles with, and they really weren't able to get Mixon going until that play, the trick play. So definitely an area where, and it doesn't get any easier against the Browns, which is the Bengals' next opponent.
I mean, the two drives I think that are going to get overlooked in this loss are the two red zone drives where the Bengals went inside the five, and on those two drives they came away with 3 points. On the first one, the turnover on downs, they started that with two runs, failed up the middle from the one, and then Burrow took a sack as the Bengals went backwards on that drive, which ended as a turnover on downs. Then later in the game was a similar story. The Bengals get inside the five, and if you're a team that's confident in your ability to run the ball into the end zone, if you have the offensive line that I think Brian Callahan calls it, these will plays, these effort plays, these mentality plays, if you have the line to do that, then it's easy when you're inside the five. Instead, the Bengals have to go deeper and deeper into their bag of red zone offense. And, you know, that drive ended with a play where Burrow threw the ball to Boyd, and Boyd turned one way and the throw went the other. It was probably the biggest miscommunication the Bengals have had all season. And again, so much of that goes back to how the Bengals' offensive game plan just wasn't solidified and clicked like it was so many other weeks this season.
Yeah, and it's also kind of a concerning trend at this point, you'd have to say, the Bengals' inability to start games quickly and productively. It just seems like, and I can't put my finger on why, and I'm sure Zach Taylor can't because he'd probably have it fixed by now, but another performance where the Bengals start the game and they're not able to get it going. They have yet to come out just absolutely rolling offensively in a game yet this season.
Yeah, so again, this time the Bengals had it set up for them. I keep going back to those two red zone drives. They had the first drive, which didn't go well. The Jets took the 7-0 lead, but then literally they get the ball at the 1 yard line. And then a couple minutes later, they get the ball at the 16-yard line. You've seen so many reasons where, you know, the Bengals had three and outs this season. The Bengals offense couldn't get off to a strong start early, but this wasn't normal game script setup. Like normally you have your first 15 plays scripted and then you're expecting those to be at like a neutral or sub-neutral part of the field. Instead, the Bengals had to go right to the red zone offense, which had been a strength. And for the first time all season, they got virtually nothing out of it early on. They scored on that second drive. Then later in the game, they didn't score in the red zone. So again, this time was different because it was red zone offense instead of scripted offense, but it showed some of the same issues that the Bengals have dealt with early in games.
Well, speaking, since we've talked about what we didn't necessarily like today, let's talk about what we did like. And a big time red zone option for Joe Burrow today was Tyler Boyd. It had been a couple games where Tyler Boyd's name wasn't really called upon, and he makes this offense go. Every time they're able to get him involved, he very rarely drops the ball. He's just solid. So it was good to see him get more involved and make that great touchdown catch he had, which was a great play by Joe Burrow to find him in the end zone. But also, T. Higgins, this was a game where the Bengals wide receiver trio showed you what they can be, because it wasn't the Ja'Marr Chase show today. I mean, he had a very good game minus the two drops, but T. Higgins, finally, 4 catches for almost 100 receiving yards. And we had been waiting to see that from Joe Burrow and T. Higgins in the deep ball connection.
I mean, those were Burrow's best 3 throws of the game. There was the play action where this time the shot went to Higgins over the middle of the field. Burrow, standing poised in the pocket, just flings a rocket down the field to Higgins. Then there was the other throw to Higgins down the right sideline where Higgins made that crazy contested catch. And then, kind of on the other end of the quarterback throw spectrum, that scramble play where Boyd's timing is his elite skill. He pairs that timing with Burrow's scramble to get wide open for that catch in the back of the end zone. But I do think it's also to point out the other side of the coin. I mentioned the Tyler Boyd play where him and Burrow weren't on the same page. And then to T. Higgins, this wasn't Higgins' fault, but a really surprising moment of the game. 3rd and 6, first drive of the third quarter, the Bengals have a chance to even though they allowed that touchdown at the end of the first half, kind of double up with scores at the end of the second quarter and start of the third quarter. But then on third and six, they throw a fade to Higgins down the left sideline. Like, I know Higgins had been hot, but that's kind of the play call and the read from Burrow that has me looking back at a missed opportunity there as well. So, again, even though Higgins and Boyd had two of their best moments of the season, their usage and the final result left a lot to be desired.
Mm-hmm, for sure. And continuing on with what we liked, I thought that Trey Hendrickson, he didn't have the type of dominant performance, but he still was able to record a sack. We didn't see a whole lot in terms of tackles for loss from Larry Ogunjobi, but Trey Hendrickson continues to impress, as I thought Sam Hubbard also had a really good game.
Yeah, but at the end of the day, they didn't have as much opportunity to do it. The Jets found a better way than the Bengals did against very different offensive lines. I would say the Bengals even have a better offensive line than the Jets. The Jets found a way to make it matter that the Bengals have a struggling offensive line, and the Bengals didn't find a way to make it matter that the Jets have an offensive line that's been playing really poorly this season.
So let's talk about Zach Taylor's comments following the game. He started off his press conference by saying, "We got outplayed and we got outcoached." And he said, I also at the same time don't want to overreact. And I think that's where the Bengals are going to find themselves this week, with a lot of questions to be answered, because their next opponent is a division game against the Browns team that's 4-4, coming off of a 15-12 loss to the Steelers, which, I mean, 12 points in 15, that's not great. But as far as with the Bengals, how they draw this line between taking this game seriously, because this was a bad loss. It shouldn't be glossed over as, oh, you know, it's just one game. This was a bad loss because the Bengals were trying to cement themselves in terms of take us seriously. We're the number one seed, and you just can't, the best teams, they can't go on the road and have a performance like that today.
It's funny, I'm not even looking at it in terms of the big picture and what it means over the season. I just see three things: pass protection, tackling in the open field, and pass coverage by linebackers as three areas that had flown under the radar this season a little bit, but are areas that really got shined a light on today. Like, it's less about, to me, how they played, how they looked, how they practiced leading up to the game, and more about how do they make sure that those three things that were the reasons the Bengals lost the game don't turn into long-term issues over the course of the end of the season.
Yeah, so we'll see how they're kind of able to combat what took place today. We'll hear from Lou Anarumo this week about what he has to say about the defensive performance, but not a great performance. But at the end of the day, the Bengals are still 5-3 and have a chance to control their own destiny in the division, and that's what they'll have coming up against the Browns. Charlie, any other final thoughts you have?
I don't think so. I think that... you know what? I will. I'll take this moment to congratulate Mike White on a genuinely impressive game. I didn't expect the Jets offense to cross 200 yards today. They crossed 500 because White was patient. I mean, this is a compliment. He was conservative in that he did such a good job controlling the ball. The interceptions weren't his fault. His throws were well timed. He responded from an injury. He came back and he played his best football, I think, in the fourth quarter too. His best throw of the game might have been that touchdown throw to Croft to end it. So credit to him. It was a really special moment for him at the expense of the Bengals.
Yeah, Joe Burrow said he went up to him following the game and just congratulated him and told him, you know, how impressive he thought his performance today. And you brought up a good point that I wanted to talk about before we head out. The Bengals defense was able to create turnovers, which was something that this defense hasn't quite done yet. Everything else was really good about the Bengals defense heading into this game, except for their ability to create turnovers. They ended up creating three turnovers, and that's what I asked Jesse Bates. I said, how frustrating is that? You finally get the part of your game that you guys have been wanting to improve where you want it to be, but then the other half of it, like, they just didn't put it all together, and that's what I thought was interesting. They finally were able to get some interceptions, which is what we were waiting for the Bengals defense to become more opportunistic.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny. It seems like teams have been throwing Jesse Bates' way less this season. The league has caught up to the fact that he's so good. And Then what happened today is the Jet, it's ironic. The Jets didn't throw Bates' direction at all. He was the high safety. Obviously, basically all of the Jets game was underneath and over the middle stuff in front of Bates. And then the interception he gets is on a play literally in front of Bates where he isn't even really in the play. Hilton tips it up to Bates and compliments Bates' game like that by setting that play up. So it is ironic a little bit in a game where the Jets offense was more conservative in taking shots than any offense the Bengals have played. That was the one that led to a turnover, which I think does show how much turnovers can fluctuate, how that's something that you can't kind of rely on week in, week out, and how that's something that, like, your identity can't be turnovers, as the Steelers, the Dolphins can tell you. And the Bengals, the good news is the Bengals' identity so far hasn't been. That's something they have in their favor.
Well, and while we're talking about it, we should talk about the Mike, you brought up Mike Hilton. We need to talk about the questionable call at the end of the game. What did you make of that?
So we'll talk about the call in a second, but first, this was, we talked about this being a new Bengals team, a new Bengals, a stage of the winning cycle, and this is the first time they've had a moment like this. This was the first time in Zach Taylor's time with the Bengals that there has been such a notable signature call that was questionable, and specifically I'm saying that this is the first time during Zach Taylor's coaching career that reporters have needed to go to the officials for a pool report about a call that determined the game. And I mean, we all know it was a clean hit. We all know that Ty Washington was the one who ducked his head down and the referees had a different interpretation. And now it'll be interesting to see how, knowing that and knowing how Mike Hilton made the right play, that gets addressed this week for a team that had so many tackling issues already. Is that compounded or reflected at all with one play where theoretically or technically Hilton was in a position where the referees could have interpreted it the way that they called it? Like, I'm curious how that gets addressed this week.
Yeah, and it's worth noting that when the players were asked about it, meaning Jesse Bates in particular, he said, we were told to not talk about it. So Zach Taylor didn't really want to get into it, and neither did the players. And I think that they you can't speak for them, but I think they probably feel some type of way about it because it was a huge play. Any other final thoughts you got on today's performance?
I'm glad we brought up the call because, like, I think it's important to lay this seed here. If the Bengals miss the playoffs by the game, though, I do think it's important to not tie the entire season on that call because, you know, as we led off this podcast, the Bengals led by 11 points with 5 minutes left and lost the game, and they can't be in that position in the first place where one call like that, even if they were just caught in the wrong place at the wrong time, is able to lead to such a notable loss at such an important part of the season.
Yeah. Tons of more content about today's game coming from Charlie and I, all up on Cincinnati.com. Charlie and I will be back this week for our Bengals Beat podcast preview to get you guys set for the upcoming AFC North showdown when the Cleveland Browns come to town. The Bengals will finally be back at Paul Brown Stadium, so I know a lot of people will be excited to see them playing at home. That's it for Charlie and I, and we'll talk to you guys this week.